I'm Cape.
And I'm Drew.
We're just two former student athletes who understand the game.
Not just on the court.
But in life.
At the end of the day, we just want to help.
Today's athletes and former just trying to find their way.
It's bigger than sports.
This is the Cape and Drew podcast. The real TikTok. What's up, everybody? I'm Cape.
I'm Drew.
And today is a special show. Again, we are in season two. And you know, we have our first guest of this season, and today's show is called The Story of the Walk-On, featuring Mr. Michael Manzuel. What's up, Michael?
What's up, everybody? How y'all doing?
Doing good. So, as y'all probably know, we just came back from the Black Student Athlete Summit in Austin, Texas, and we had a chance to network with a lot of people, a lot of student athletes, current and former, and it was funny, Michael. I think you hit us up on LinkedIn about being on the show before the summit, right?
Yes.
And it was crazy because I actually met you at the reception. I saw you present earlier that day, and then I met you at the reception, not knowing it was you. And then we just had a candid conversation about sports and just kind of that transition to life after sports. So it was kind of organic. And then I was like, man, we definitely need to have this dude on the show. So thanks for being with us this morning. And we're going to go ahead and get started. So the first question I have, or we have, is, you know, just kind of tell us a little bit about yourself, like where you're from, what sports you played, who was the best player you played against or saw play live. So, yeah, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so, you know, Michael Manzuel, born and raised from Maryland, basically all my life until I left for school. I was fortunate enough to go to school at West Virginia University for 4 years. Played high school football mostly all my life. Started youth football when I was in like eighth grade. So I was like a late bloomer. So I played from like eighth grade all the way through high school. And then when I got to college, I actually was fortunate enough to walk on, make the team after trying out. So that was a very fortunate time in my life. And I mean, 2015 season at West Virginia, I mean, I can say like that was one of the most talented teams I've ever played with and against. We had like, I'm pretty sure we had like over like 12 people go to the league at some point from that team. But I guess the best person I could say at that time was Carl Joseph. He was an All-American safety. He was like a 4-year starter. Unfortunately, tore his ACL his senior year, but it didn't stop him from going first round in the draft that following year. So definitely say Carl Joseph. Shout out to them.
And just like you said, we met you at the Black Student Athlete Summit. Like, how would you say your experience was there? And like, what was like one of your biggest takeaways from being at the summit?
Man, honestly, it was a blessing because, you know, like as African American people, like we know there's a lot of professionals out there, but when you're not surrounded by them and you don't know them personally, it makes a huge difference. So my biggest takeaway was just the amount of people that were there, you know, from quality places, high degrees, you know, high elite performing athletes who all want to prepare for that life after sport and focus on the issues that they face during sport. Presenting there, it was my first time, and being able to present there on coping skills that athletes have while balancing multiple roles, it was something that like I took away from news stories and personal experiences that I've noticed. And so to be able to speak to current and former student athletes on, you know, stuff we've all faced before all in one setting was a complete blessing.
That's awesome, man. And one of the things you did, you touched on it during your presentation, or actually it was a question from the audience where you kind of touched on it, and me and you kind of talked about it while we were eating some chicken wings and some quesadillas. But you said you dealt with some depression during your playing days. If you don't mind sharing, could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah. So my story, it takes like a really unexpected and complex twist. But I mean, long story short, you know, I was out with a group of friends one time, and this was like early on in the season. You know, people, they like got into an argument with it, escalating to a fight. And unfortunately, we all got kicked off the team. So that was like the night of, you know, our second home game. We were all kicked off, you know, that following Sunday afternoon. So like when I say like my life literally changed in 24 hours, it was really like true. So, I mean, like when you kicked off the team and you don't get a chance to like defend yourself or nobody hears your side of the story, especially being a walk-on, it was just really hard for me to cope with that. So that was 2015. I would say I was depressed all the way until 2017. You know, I tried out multiple times after that. They never took me back. I was just, you know, I was led on, you know, being told I could try out and nobody would hold anything against me. And then I would try out. No one took me. So it took me a really long time to cope with that. But it honestly was a blessing in disguise because it introduced me to the mental health side of sport, which is, you know, probably the most important concept of sport. Because if you're not mentally healthy, you're not going to, you know, you're not going to see things the same way. You're not going to do things the same way. So, you know, yeah, that was my story.
What year were you when you got kicked off the team?
2015. So,
you were a sophomore?
Yes. I walked on while I was in the second semester of my freshman year. Spring ball, summer workouts, training camp, and then the first 2 weeks of the season is what I made it to. And then after that, that's when we got kicked off. So, yeah, I was a red shirt sophomore.
Okay. What would you say, like, your overall experience was like in college? Because when I think of, like, walk-ons, especially at, like, a West Virginia, I imagine that you might have gotten maybe offers to play at maybe smaller schools. So, like, your – what made you decide to, like, I'm going to walk on, like – at West Virginia, because you think about West Virginia, you know, it's a powerhouse school, but it's not, I can't imagine you just saying like, hey man, I just want to go to West Virginia and be a student.
Right. No, it's actually funny you ask, because my journey to West Virginia, if I could explain it in any way, it was more like a package deal. So fortunately, my trainer at the time, Troy Jones, he has a friend named Daryl who helps people get recruited. And when I was in high school, he informed me that he could get me into a D2 school potentially to play football and hopefully earn a scholarship. Not saying that, like, you know, I wasn't against, you know, playing at a smaller level or anything like that, but West Virginia at the time, it was only 3 hours away from home. My older brother went there for a year, so I was like kind of familiar with it. They actually had they were one of the few programs who had a bachelor's in sports psychology. So when I learned about like the academic benefits of there, I was like, this is a no-brainer. Was fortunate to pay in-state tuition because of that program. And I mean, at the time I was just like, look, I think I had a chance to play Division I football. I might as well make it as a walk-on. As far as college goes, I mean, honestly, I had one of the best academic tracks I could have to this date because of college. Excuse me. And I think it's interesting because when I got there, I was 17, so I was young. But I just feel like I matured really quickly for my age, especially when I made the football team that following year. But I mean, like school-wise, man, I graduated with honors. I got an academic scholarship. You know, the research I was doing with my mentor at the time eventually got published. So I mean, college experience, it was a very fortunate one.
Cool. So look, man, and this is a compliment, but have you ever seen that movie Rudy?
Yeah.
you strike me as that kind of dude that was like, and it's not because you're shorter, it's not like right. that, but you kind of come across as that dude that a person like me and Drew, like relatively speaking, like basketball wise, mm-hmm. like we would have hated you because you were going all out and we just played a game the night before and you're trying to pick me up full court. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
what was, and that's a compliment, you Thank know, you. I mean, because the movie was about him working hard and, you know, he finally got in and all of that. So, what was your role as a walk-on? Mm-hmm. Did you ever see yourself playing? And mm-hmm. did you ever feel like you should be playing?
Yeah, so my role as a walk-on at that point was, you know, practice player, scout team. And honestly, I was fine with it. I'm the type of person who's really big on development. So, you know, at that time, you know, I'm learning, you know, the offense. At the time, I was playing slot receiver. And then around the end of summer, I was asked to switch to cornerback, actually, because a couple of dudes got hurt, so they needed more bodies going into camp. And actually, a funny story about that, when the coach asked me to switch, he was like, you know, you might have a better chance making it into camp as a corner than a receiver, because we got a lot of receivers. So for me, that was like a very big point of my life, because I was like, wow, if I just sit here and I'm like, nah, coach, I'm a receiver, I probably don't end up making it to camp, as mm-hmm. opposed to accepting that role as, you know, a versatile player. It got me into training camp. So that was a pretty big point in my life. As far as, you know, scout team, like, I mean, I'm still competing with some of the top athletes in the nation. You know, I'm working on my technique. I'm learning schemes, gaining the coach's trust. You know, it's just a really big developmental point for me. I feel like that following year, I was like, all right, cool. I'm going to prove myself this season, show my versatility, show my commitment, and then hopefully next spring compete for at least the starting rotation, whether it was staying at corner or staying at receiver. So I saw myself, of course, you know, playing eventually. I just knew, like, I wasn't about to just be tossed into the field. Because, you know, we just had so much depth and so much talent. I was just really trying to take it all in. But the cool thing about studying sports psychology is one of the concepts is called imagery. And I'm pretty sure, as you guys know, as basketball players, imagery is when you visualize yourself, you know, succeeding and visualize yourself in certain situations. And I mean, the first game of the season that year, I'm on the sidelines. It's the first home game of the season. There's a lot of expectations. Pretty sure we had like a sold out crowd, and like we won. And I was like, man, I can't wait to be a part of this next year, like really contributing. So I definitely saw myself developing at that point, but no doubt I believed in myself to play.
And this is a kind of a random question, a little bit off the topic, but mm-hmm. now we always talk about like when we played against those like top level athletes, we could, you know, we were giving it our all, but we could always see like, okay, I could tell they're on a whole nother level. Mm-hmm. So being that, you know, you're in the West Virginia, I think I want to say it was the Big 12 at the time.
Yeah.
You know, so you're saying you're playing against those top athletes. Did you ever look at them and be like, dang, I see like how they got here, as far as just them being that athlete and like just having like just certain levels they could just channel into that you might not have been able to get to at that time?
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, it's funny that you say that, because I think there was this one specific play in practice. It was starting offense versus starting defense, and one of our receivers at the time, Jordan Thompson, they ran like a double reverse play with the slot. So it went one way, and then the other receiver handed off to Jordan to reverse the field. And the safety at the time, my man KJ Dillon, he like, I don't know how, he just like called it out. He knew exactly what was going to happen. He flowed with the first reverse play and then somehow was like, no, this isn't the real play. Turned his hips and like full on booked it to the other side of the field, where Jordan actually got the ball and reversed and was running to the first down. And I'm pretty sure he stopped Jordan right before the first down. And then like, obviously they get up, they start talking trash. KJ was like, nah, bro, you're not going to get me this time. And I was on the sideline and I was just like, yo. Like, I was like, it's one thing to make the play, but then it's just like, you know, having that knowledge and just like trusting your instinct that that's not the actual play. Like, that's something I've really adopted with the defense. That's why, you know, I always shout out the 2015 West Virginia football team as a whole, because they took me in as a player. They never, you know, treated me different as a walk-on. They kept me in check, you know, as a young player. But, like, you know, there's another play where, you know, it's the spring game, and I get in at receiver. You know, I had a couple of tackles. You know, I'm getting my foot wet. This is my first collegiate, you know, performance. Mm-hmm. And I was very fortunate. I got an interception in the game. Mm-hmm. And, like, when I tell you, like, I get the interception, I fall on the ground, like, the ball pops out, but, like, the play was over. But, like, the ball pops out, and I've never seen my hand, like, quickly wrap the ball back and, like, bring it back. I get up, and everybody on the defense is just, like, cheering. They're calling me my nickname. My nickname is Lil Wheat. And they're just, like, they're just going crazy. And, like, I just get up, and I start celebrating, like, we just won the Big 12 championship. Because it's just one of those moments, man. It's just walk-ons, like, you know, they get the chance or they're underlooked. So for me to get an interception, like, in a college program like that, like, it just really changed my perception and confidence. And, yeah, like, you know, just even if I was running with the second team, the third team, it didn't matter. Like, I was on the field making plays.
Okay. Rudy.
How the mentality that you develop as a walk-on, like, can I help you – like, transition into, like, the real world?
I mean, everything, honestly. Like, respect, commitment, hustle, you know, grit, resilience. It all stemmed from, you know, trying to prove myself to, you know, the players, the coaches, you know, taking time to practice on my own, you know, my mental performance. That's why I think being in a sports psychology program the same time I was walking off, was probably the best thing for me, because I'm literally applying everything I learned in the classroom back in the field, the weight room, the classroom. So honestly, I just think that it really prepared me for the real world. Getting kicked off the team for something I didn't do, that was just one of those things where it's like my first real introduction to how life can operate. And I mean, like, you know, academically, I still excel, but it was just like mentally, I was just like, you know, this isn't fair, you know, like, why this happened to me? But then, like, I'm very fortunate it did, because honestly, it got me to talking with y'all, you know, like that type of, you know, hustle, that type of, you know, authenticity, like meeting y'all at the Black Student Athlete Summit. And then, like, I have a story to tell now. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, without that story, you know, I don't know what I'm doing.
Right.
To be honest. But you know, definitely just it means a lot to me to learn that it's like transferring those skills into different areas is like what sets you up to succeed. So definitely the main one I'd probably just say is resilience, because when you're overlooked, you gotta work twice as hard just to get recognized. So then, like, in school, turning papers on time, giving presentation professionally, you know, applying and getting denied by jobs, you know, relationships, you know, trying to make multiple relationships work at once. It's probably resilience is probably the biggest trait that transferred over.
Yeah, and it's interesting you say that, because, you know, I'm sure you all know this narrative about how as a Black man, you got to work twice, and sometimes even three times as hard as other people. So, you know, don't nothing change. You know, that mentality of, you know, everybody practices at 8 a.m., you got to be there at 7, and then you got to stay an hour late. You know what I mean? So it's the same thing really at work, where, you know, you could have a doctorate and your boss could have a master's. And, you know, of course, that's circumstantial, because maybe they got the experience or whatever, but it's still, you know, it's all relative, right? So, you know, and what was it like for you when you didn't have sports anymore? Like, you know, because I know for me and Drew, that our whole premise of the show, this podcast, is talking about, trying to find your identity outside of your sport. And so that transition from just a mental perspective, but just physically, you don't have practice anymore. You know, for me, I talked about on the show, I gained like 50 pounds, but mentally, mentally, I just like, what do you do with your hands? Like, what's going on? You know what I'm saying? So what was it like for you when you didn't have football anymore?
Yeah, that was probably the hardest time of my life, especially being 18, like at that part of my development. I mean, honestly, man, because, you know, you have a set schedule, like you got cram, you know, X amount of classes before the afternoon, and then your afternoon is all sport. I was getting done around like 12:50, 1 o'clock every day because I had to be at the stadium by like 2:30. And like I come home into my apartment and I would just be like, I guess I'll make some food. I guess I'll open a book, do some homework. And I mean, like, I was a really good student. Like, I had to stay ahead of classes to make sure I was doing well and I can focus all on football. So like, I'm knocking out assignments in like an hour. I got, you know, almost 8-10 hours until I gotta go to sleep. And like, my roommate at the time was also my roommates at the time were also my teammates, and my man Kenyatta and Tyree at the time, we would just be like, you know, we'd be watching TV, but it just wasn't the same. I think one of the hardest parts was just like when we all got kicked off, a lot of my friends transferred. And I mean, and I absolutely, you know, I don't blame them at all. But a lot of them, like, you know, transferred. My one friend PJ, he went back home. He started making music. My other friend, Coy, he actually went on to join the military. Shout out Coy. And then, like, my other friends, you know, they transferred to different schools to continue playing football. And then I was the only one who was really left at West Virginia. So it was just one of those things where it's like the people, you know, those group of walk-ons, you know, we all pushed each other to exceed and make sure we were staying on top of stuff. And then, you know, an unfortunate situation happens on all of us. And now it's like, what? They were like, you know, why don't you leave? I was like, I mean, I'm here for school and football, but, you know, football was just the biggest thing at the point. So for me, I was just like, you know, I guess I'm going to just be a really, really good student. I've always been a really good student, but it was just one of those things where it's like, I ain't got no other time to put towards anything. But I was very fortunate where it's like that paid off in the long run.
That's great.
I'd be thinking about like when people, especially with football, like with Cape and I, like when we miss basketball, like we could always just go play pickup, but like you can't just go find a random black football team or something like that.
No, it's funny. It's funny you say that because I did end up joining like the intramural league for flag football. Just, you know, obviously get out the house, still play football. And I actually would play with my other friend, JD. And we would like talk to each other as if we were still on the team because I was actually on the team with him for a period of time as well. And we're both from Maryland. So like we would, you know, make a play, we would juke somebody, we would score a touchdown, and we would always yell out DMV product. And it was obviously, like, you know, we're joking around, but like it really just meant a lot because I was just like, dang, like I just couldn't imagine what I could really do, you know, on the actual field at Milan Puskar Stadium. So it's it was one of those things, like you said, like y'all pick up, play a quick pickup game at the rec, you know. I was fortunate to, you know, do that for the last couple of years while I was at West Virginia.
If you could kind of go back and do anything different, what would be like one of the things you would definitely do?
I wouldn't change anything. I'm gonna keep it 100. If I go back and change something, I'd probably not on the phone with y'all. like we're being real. I mean, I think about that all the time. Like, you know, what if we didn't go out that night? What if, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I mean, it's just like, for me, my mindset now, it's like, I guess for some reason, this was supposed to happen because I believe everything happens for a reason. Now this is, you know, being 5 years removed from the incident, but like my mom, she always told me, she was like, I would rather have this happen to you than a career ending injury. And, you know, actually being caught up with like criminal stuff that results in me like getting suspended or kicked out of school. She was like, I would rather have you, you know, kicked off the team for no reason, but you're healthy than, you know, some other unfortunate situation. So, I mean, yeah, like, even though I never got the chance to talk to any of my coaches, I never, you know, got the chance to prove myself on the field. At the end of the day, you know, I just followed my faith, trusted God, and honestly, it led me to this point of my life. So I wouldn't change anything.
It's kind of crazy. That's... we'd be talking about, like, if we could go back and do things different, but now we'd be like, man, you couldn't really pay me to change to places with any of my old teammates.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. If there's one thing I could go back and experience, it's just being in the locker room and practices with games with the 2015 team. Yeah. Other than that, no, I'm good.
Yeah, that's a dope perspective, man. We say the same thing. Like, now it's like you hate that it happened, but you know, obviously you saw us at the summit and it's created our story. Like, exactly. You know, and really our testimony. And so, you know, I wouldn't change anything either. But I do still think about, man, what if things would have been different? And, you know, how would my trajectory have changed? But, you know, you can't live in the past. We got to move on. So, but anyway, how do you view today's student athletes?
I would probably have to say today's student athlete is a lot more under the microscope. And what I mean by that is just like we promote and put them up on such a high pedestal because of the way like technology has changed, the way recruiting has changed, the way, you know, a whole bunch of, you know, factors that, you know, just even like a decade ago wasn't that big of a deal. So it's like, I mean, the way recruiting has changed, like we know who's the number one, you know, position in a lot of sports basically every other week because all they do is talk about them. Not taking away, you know, that they deserve that recognition. It's just they're always published and broadcasted somewhere. You know, it's just it's interesting because it's just like sports is one of those, you know, platforms where obviously all like literal cameras are on you all the time. So it's like you always can have an inside look into people's lives, not knowing the whole story. And so, I mean, I just think like nowadays it's just like it's a lot more elite. The competitions, the expectations, obviously they get higher and higher every other year. But I think these student athletes have a lot of leverage if they use it the right way. And I just think that, you know, student athletes who are high schoolers, not even like have life figured out, but just have a basic foundation and a basic plan, like when you go into school, instead of just, no, I'm only here to play, you know, whatever sport you play. I think my biggest thing was like the research I conducted was on athletic identity. And you guys know, we talked about identity foreclosure at the summit, and it's just a really unfortunate thing, but I understand why they do it. It is, you know, oh no, I'm only here to play my sport, so I can't really worry about anything else. So I think for me, it's like a lot of these kids, like nowadays, like there's a lot more resources out there for them, and I hope they continue to take advantage of that.
And kind of like to tie everything up, what would be your biggest piece of advice? You kind of touched on it a little bit, but just like today's athlete or student athlete.
My advice is not necessarily don't invest 100% into your sport, but put the same amount of effort you want to succeed in your sport into everything else in life. Like transfer all those skills, like we talked about earlier, transfer all those skills into school, into, you know, whatever career plan you're coming up with, because the best thing you want to do, whether you graduate or declare for you know, whatever professional rank or whatever you do after school, after your college or after your playing career is over, you have another plan. You know, one of my favorite quotes is everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face. And I'm pretty sure we all got punched, kicked, jumped at one point in our lives, especially being an athlete. So it's like you want to be prepared for that as opposed to putting all your eggs in one basket. Like, I can't stress that enough because, you know, I saw it was a few months ago, there was a football player. I think he was at the University of Texas as well, but, you know, I think he's a linebacker. I forget his name. He's a linebacker, but he has a degree in economics or finance, and he wants to start his own sneaker company. Even just like having that idea, like, I don't know how he's going to do it. I don't know when he's going to do it, but just having the idea, like, dang, when I'm done, I want to do something with sneakers. I'll take that type of athlete over the athlete where it's like, I'm only invested in sport because I'm just like, you just don't know. Yeah. So yeah, that's my biggest advice. Like, the same way you want to start your freshman year, that same mindset, apply that to school, apply it to, you know, your relationships, build quality relationships, take care of your mental health. You know, that was the whole topic of the summit is mental health. If you are not mentally healthy, you are not going to last in anything, yet alone sport. So make sure you're using the resources, find somebody to talk to that you trust, that you can fully express how you're feeling. Cause once you learn how to handle that, especially if you're about to start as a freshman, you know, that's 4 years of you being able to use your coping skills, because like adversity is going to come at you regardless. So you might as well prepare for that rather than react to that.
That's awesome, man. Hey, listen, man. Hey, I don't think we could have picked a better guest for the show today, man. So we certainly appreciate you. Where are you based out of now, Michael?
Now I'm in Pittsburgh.
You're in Pittsburgh. Okay, yes, sir. Excellent. Okay, cool. It's cold up there, ain't it?
Yeah, man. You have no idea.
Yeah, man. Well, we certainly appreciate you being on the show, man. You definitely was one of the ones at the summit that we were like, okay, you know, you presented well, you conducted yourself well. Every time I saw you, you had a plate in your hand at the reception, but it's cool. I know how that goes. We got to eat, hey, right?
Got it. You get it?
So we appreciate it, man. We wishing you well. Glad we were able to connect. And, you know, obviously you got my number, you got Drew's number. We on LinkedIn, we connected, and we definitely looking forward to seeing you progress and
of course
do your thing and keep doing your thing, man, because you probably don't even realize you're inspiring a lot of people. So keep doing it, man.
Of course, man. Thank you guys for having me. Obviously, thank you for connecting with me with LinkedIn and at the summit. Appreciate you guys giving me the opportunity to be on the podcast. This is my first one, so couldn't have had a better platform and better group of people to talk about real stuff too. So I appreciate y'all.
No problem, man. And listen, for the listeners out there, I want y'all to know this dude is really, really gritty. He's really resilient because literally he's been talking about being on this show for the past 2 or 3 months. And we were talking about when we were going to record, and he made it work. Mm-hmm. He made it work until, you know, it happened. So he definitely is walking like he talking. So we appreciate you. Yeah, no problem, man. I'm Kate.
I'm Drew.
We out, man. We'll talk to y'all soon.
God bless y'all.